If your small business has a problem, you could say,
"Ugh, just my luck."
But you should say,
"Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there."
And we'll help get you back in business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Kuh, your host for today. Lee, unfortunately, is not available to record, and so it is just me as a solo host again for this podcast. But we've got a lot in store for you. We have a great conversation with pitcherless writer Carson Picard about changeups and about Dylan Cease. Definitely a little bit of baseball nerdery in that conversation, so you won't want to miss that. And then we'll also talk about streamers in this podcast and just talk about three guys who you might want to consider picking up in this upcoming week. But before we get into it, just a reminder that you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at ThisWeekPLpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcasts on. We are on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. So just make sure that you follow us, and please leave a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Before we get into the interview with Carson, just wanted to do a quick rundown of some of the news in Major League Baseball this week. It's a big one. Jung-Hoo Lee of the San Francisco Giants is now officially out for season with a torn labrum in his left shoulder. It's kind of unfortunate for the rookie. He had some pretty good showings this season, had a little bit of a nice hit streak going, and it's just unfortunate to see that his season is going to be cut short by injury. Bobby Miller of the Los Angeles Dodgers faced hitters for 3 innings in a simulated game this week. He is coming back from right shoulder inflammation, so the Dodgers are kind of slowly moving him along, but it wouldn't be surprising to see him eventually get placed on the roster at some point in the next couple weeks. Eloy Jimenez of the Chicago White Sox is expected to spend extended time on the injured list due to straining his hamstring. It sounds like he'll be out for several weeks instead of just, you know, the minimum 10 days that the injured list requires. John Gray of the Texas Rangers was removed from his start after 75 pitches with right groin tightness. We'll see if that leads to anything more serious for Gray. John Means in Baltimore was pulled early from his game on Wednesday after experiencing discomfort in his elbow, and he has now been placed on the injured list. Josh Lowe of the Tampa Bay Rays looks like he's headed for another trip to the injured list after leaving Wednesday's game early with right side tightness. He had a similar issue in spring training that forced him to miss most of the start of the season, and he just came back about a week and a half ago, and it looked pretty good. And unfortunately, he looks like that injury he was dealing with has flared up again. Austin Riley continues to miss games. He was out for the 11th consecutive game with an intercostal strain as we're recording this on Friday, and it sounds like he will not be back in action until by the earliest this upcoming Monday. So unfortunate for anyone who rosters Austin Riley. You essentially just lost 2 weeks of baseball, and because Atlanta didn't bother to put him on the injury list, he's been stuck on your bench as well. So just an unfortunate situation for everyone involved. Luis Robert Jr. of the Chicago White Sox will be starting a rehab assignment next Tuesday in AAA in Charlotte. Tyler Wells of the Baltimore Orioles has been cleared to resume throwing after being placed on the injured list in mid-April with elbow inflammation. So good to see that there's going to be some more reinforcements for Baltimore, especially with John Means now being out. And then finally, Shane Baz of the Tampa Bay Rays was activated from the injured list and optioned to AAA. This was kind of weird because he actually had been making rehab starts in the minors, and so the Rays decided to activate him, but then also just send him back to AAA. He should be called up to the team in early June. It sounds like the Rays just want one or two more rehab assignments for Shane Baz to go through before they bring him up to the majors. For player performances, no recaps this week since it's just going to be a solo pod. Again, we definitely recommend that you check out the Batter's Box and SP Roundup articles. Those guys there do great work every single day. Nick, obviously, on the SP Roundup articles, but we also have writers that are churning out hitting recap articles every single day. Got some great puns, obviously, but just some great insight into what is going on for hitters in Major League Baseball. Just maybe some examples of that. Ryan Amore had a really good write-up on Lars Nootbaar's game last Friday, stating that despite some of the recent power that Nootbaar has seen, he's still not a must-pick-up player on your fantasy team, unfortunately, because the only nice thing about Nootbaar is his walk rate, and there really is nothing else that's really good going that's going well for him right now. He's not really a guy that you need to go pick up, but he is a guy that you want to keep an eye out on. You know, if something turns around for him, if he starts actually hitting more because he's essentially barely above the Mendoza line, that might help him become a solid contributor, especially in OBP leagues for sure, because of his walk rate. But being able to maybe generate a little bit more power from Nootbaar would be certainly nice and puts him more in the conversation to be part of a, you know, outfielder 5 squad or maybe an outfielder 3 squad with multiple utility spots. And then, of course, I don't need to tell you how good the SP roundup is. This week, Nick highlighted Braxton Garrett, Aaron Civale, Pablo Lopez, Brian Wu, Jake Irvin, and AJ Smith-Shawver, as well as pretty much every other pitcher that pitched those nights. So, obviously, definitely check out those articles. Just super helpful to just being caught up on, you know, what's happening in baseball. I know for me, a lot of times, I kind of just focus on my own fantasy teams. And even though I have multiple fantasy baseball teams, it's easy to kind of forget what's going on with the rest of the majors and know who's doing well and who's doing not. So having these articles just kind of give you a little bit of reminder of like, oh yeah, this guy's actually on a little bit of a hot streak. Maybe you want to consider him, I think is good things to know and just be aware of, especially when it comes to pitching and knowing, you know, who's hot and, you know, who's on, you know, like, you know, what Nick likes to call a Vargas rule. Maybe those are the guys that you can pick up or maybe, you know, sell high if they're doing something unconventionally good. You know, better than what we usually expect. So definitely, again, check out those articles and all the other articles on Pitcher List. You know, we do a lot of stuff here in terms of player recaps, but, you know, there's also good resources on two-star pitchers, you know, hitter lineups that you should be trying to avoid or pick up for your team. Those articles come out on Sunday. And yeah, just a lot of good stuff to help you manage your fantasy teams, especially when now it feels like we're all kind of settled in. You know, it's been about a little less than a month, close to 2 months actually for the fantasy baseball season. And so, you know, starting to get in a rhythm with your fantasy teams and being able to make good pickups in late May and early June. Sometimes those are really helpful in being able to, you know, help your team succeed and do well for the next couple months. Now we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Pitcher List writer Carson Picard to talk about his recent article, Dylan Cease Throws the Most Ridiculous Pitch in Baseball. And no, we are not going to be talking about his slider.
For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with a modern design that lets you go further and do more. The exterior is reimagined with compelling proportions and precise detailing, complemented by an interior built with integrity. The Defender capability is legendary. Whether you're facing off-road challenges or harsh weather conditions, its durability has been tested to the extreme. Powerful innovations like the intuitive driver display and award-winning infotainment system keep you connected. Innovative camera technologies deliver unobstructed views and effortless maneuvering. And robust cargo capacity means more room for your gear. Ready for a wide range of adventures, the Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 18 years from tonight, Grant Gill will become a comedy legend when he totally kills it at his improv class's graduation performance. Knees will be slapped. Hilarity will ensue. That's why he's already keeping himself in shape and razor sharp today with wellness tips and tools from AARP to help make sure his health lives as long as he does. Because the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/healthyliving.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All right, we are back with Pictureless writer Carson Picard. Obviously, if you've been listening to our pod this year, Carson is not a stranger to podcast listeners. But Carson, welcome back. How are you doing?
Hey, John. Thanks so much for having me. I'm doing absolutely fantastic today. Really excited to talk about something that's been fascinating to me over the last several months, even in writing and researching.
Yeah, we are going to talk about your article about Dylan Cease, but it's not a traditional, you know, pictureless deep dive into why a pitcher is good sort of article. It's about a specific pitch. The article title is Dylan Cease Throws the Most Ridiculous Pitch in Baseball. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, this seems like a fun thing to talk about. But it sounds like you've been kind of ruminating on this one for quite a while.
It started before spring training, or maybe in spring training, when I was looking through like Baseball Savant pitch arsenal stats, and I was flipping through, you know, who had the hardest thrown changeup, and then I inverted the list, and you couldn't give me 100 guesses over who had the slowest changeup in baseball. And when it came up in Dylan Cease, I was baffled, and I needed to learn more. And he came into this year throwing it even slower, and I thought, I need to write about this because I can't think of anything else.
Yeah. So we are going to talk about Dylan Cease's changeup, which he does not use that often. So I think this is going to be a really fun article. But before we really, really dive deep into it, just in case people have not been introduced to you on either our podcast or kind of on the other podcasts that you appear on for Pitchlist or your writing, why don't you give just a quick introduction for how you got involved in baseball and, you know, who's your favorite team and, you know, how have you been doing in fantasy baseball this season?
Oh, yeah, of course. So my name's Carson. I'm a writer for the Going Deep staff here at Pitcherlist. This is, I believe, my fifth article I have out. But of course, as John's mentioned, I've been on a handful of podcasts. So if you're an avid listener, you've heard my voice before. I got into baseball several years ago. I was never a huge fan of it in high school or anything like that. But during college, I got really into the sport, deep dive into all the analytics and I've really just found an endless rabbit hole of ways to be nerdy about sports. And that is my pride and joy, my bread and butter. I absolutely love that. Me and John are both Twins fans.
Yes.
Who have enjoyed an interesting season so far, to say the least.
And, yeah, the last week has not been good.
It's been something. Thankfully, the Wolves have eased our pains a bit, except for last 100%. Night. But that's we could talk about that forever. my fantasy teams are a bit of a mixed bag. No, nothing terrible, nothing fantastic. My kind of hot takes of who I thought was going to do well at the beginning of the season is so far proven pretty fruitful. So hoping that some of the higher floor guys I thought would have a high floor that haven't pan out. But, you know.
Yeah. I don't know if these are the players that you're specifically talking about, but if any of you are ever around the Pitcherless Discord, if you say the words Michael Garcia or Christian Scott, Carson will pop up immediately.
It is a bit of a summoning thing. It doesn't help them there quite often, but there was a stretch at the start of the season when every time Michael Garcia got a hit, I would be pinged. Yeah. And I was like, well, I guess this is my branding now. And I thought that was really funny. Anyway.
Yeah. We are here to talk about Dylan Cease's changeup. And this will probably end up being one of the more nerdy baseball podcasts that we do. But I'm kind of all for it because that's kind of the pitcherless way. Before we really just dive deep into Dylan Cease, I think maybe the important question is, what the heck is a changeup? I know for me, functionally, like, I know changeups obviously are slower pitches compared to fastballs. That's kind of, you know, why they're called changeups, to change up the velocity. But generally, they also have a little bit more arm side movement. So, you know, it's good to attack, you know, down and away against opposite handed batters, and then inside, down and inside against, you know, same handed guys. But ultimately, like, what is a changeup good for? Why is it part of a pitcher's arsenal?
Yeah, that like 19th century definition of a pitch that looks like a fastball but comes up slow is in many ways still relevant and is the core of a changeup's identity, right? Even modern guys who have a lot weirder changeups, I'll get to that in a second, their changeups are still, you know, a good bit slower than the fastball, and it plays off the fastball. The exception is Devin Williams' changeup, which is a whole other story, but for most guys, a changeup is a part of their arsenal and off speed, and it's kind of the black sheep of the pitch rotation that a lot of guys have. In many ways, you can kind of look at fastballs and breaking balls in a vacuum and see they're good. That's one thing that's really interesting. It's something that with the development of like stuff plus metrics has been interesting to look at, is you can tell a slider is good just by its movement. You cannot necessarily do that to the same success rate as you can with breaking balls as for off-speed pitches. Their efficacy is very much dependent on context. And like the classic use of a changeup is if a guy is fouling off a fastball, he's early on it, you throw him the changeup, they swing early, they catch nothing but air. That still is in play, but nowadays we've seen, and I think this started with around like Felix Hernandez 15 years ago. Like, this is a relatively recent development. And I talk about it in the article quite extensively, is like the power change has come in vogue, and we see guys really experiment with off speed stuff. And split finger is also in this kind of tier, and that's become much more popular this year. So we've seen a lot more emphasis on like different off speed pitches and more creative uses. But an off speed pitch gives a batter a totally different look. And like you said, it has a lot of arm side movement, which breaking balls don't really have. So that gives a different horizontal approach to at bats, and contextually, you know, within at bats, it can change up pitch speeds. It can change with timing, obviously. And, you know, nowadays we see guys throwing a changeup in the mid to low 90s sometimes. Sandy Alcantara has a sinker at about 98, changeup at like 92. And that's kind of a perfect example of someone who, you know, that's still a high velocity pitch, but it's almost like an alternate sinker kind of deal. And it really messes with the batter in a totally different way. And so we've seen this evolution from a changeup traditionally being see how much you can take off of the fastball, and then it'll be more effective because you get him to swing early, to now it's kind of become this own thing. And what's really fascinating about modern changeups is they are totally different depending on the pitcher, right? Like you go around different changeups in the league and say like Pablo Lopez's changeup is going to be wildly different than Devin Williams's changeup, or it's going to be different than a bunch of changes all throughout the league. Garrett Cole's changeup is totally different, right? They're very much, it's almost like a signature in the sense that they're all different regardless of who it is. And, you know, everyone has a fastball that goes straight and has a lot of spin. Some got are interesting, but changeups are very pitcher unique and are very widely fluctuating in the characteristics of it. And no better example of that than Dylan Cease's.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember 2 years ago, I think it's 2 years ago, when Edward Cabrera came up, right? And he's throwing basically what StatCast calls like a 97 mile an hour changeup, right? And I remember people freaking out. It's like, how can you call a changeup, a pitch that's coming in at 97 miles an hour, a changeup, right? And he's obviously, you know, like you said, kind of in a long line of pitchers that have, you know, tried to find a bit more velocity with the changeup, but differentiated enough from their fastball that it's still an effective pitch. But I think that brings us to Dylan Cease, right? And how you were talking about when you were searching for fastest changeups and you inverted that list, Dylan Cease's name comes to the top, right? Kind of the antithesis of a power change. I don't even know what, you know, what would you call the opposite of that? You name it something in the article. I'll let you call that out eventually. But yeah, it clocks in at 22 miles an hour slower than his fastball. And I think if you asked most people like, hey, you know, this pitcher's got 20 miles an hour of difference between pitch A and pitch B, you know, what do you think pitch B is? Like, I think half the time people will say, oh, that's, you know, that's their curveball. But it's Cease's changeup. And I think that's really interesting. What other metrics besides the lower velocity kind of make this pitch a changeup? You know, what are the kind of the other metrics on this that kind of make you see like this is actually a change and not just some weird like Ephus curveball style pitch?
Yeah. The difference, there's the only pitch that's really similar in terms of such a radical difference from a fastball to like a different pitch here, right? With Cease's change having just a radical difference between velocities. The best example I can think of is like Zach Greinke's like slow curve that he throw out every once in a while, and like that like 58 mile an hour one you'd see. And but that is a curveball, and a curveball obviously is thrown with topspin. It's thrown in such a way where as much spin as the pitcher wants is being directed towards pushing that ball downward. Mm-hmm. Dylan Cease's changeup has the exact same spin axis as his four-seam fastball. And what that means is that his spin rate is actually, or his spin is, instead of pushing the ball down, it's keeping the ball up. And so out of the hand, if you ever look at a curveball, it has a very distinctive pop out of the hand. And that's how you're able to identify it. It's very recognizable. Watch any Clayton Kershaw video. You'll see exactly what I mean in a second. Cease's change looks like a fastball out of the hand, and you'll probably be able to find overlays of it and see that it keeps on that same latitude for, you know, the first bit before the velocity and all their alterations inevitably, you know, make it divert from the original path. The spin rate is also another aspect of it. With fastballs, you're trying to get basically as much backspin as possible at the highest velocity possible. With changeups, that's not necessarily the case. A lot of the time you'll see changeups with much, as with is always the case, it's a very wide range in changeups, like Kevin Gausman's splitter. This is a different off-speed example, but like Kevin Gausman's splitter is a lot higher spin rate than a lot of changeups. And that's just because they're weird in the way they're thrown. It's more about the results that matter. But changeups have a lot less spin, simply put. Their RPMs are a lot lower. Cease's is like 1,300 RPM, which is about half of his fastball, right? So this is very certainly a changeup in the way it's thrown. Its pitch movement much more closely mimics a changeup than it does any other pitch. And this does kind of bring in an issue with like pitch classification, is there are certainly fringe cases where you were talking about like Cabrera's changeup and scare quotes, where it's like, is it really? And of course, you'll know like Jawan Duran's splinker when it's called a splitter. Yep. And you're like, yeah, I guess. But it's sort of it sort of defies characterizing in a way and classification. But Cease's, as far as like what we understand a changeup to be, Cease's is definitely that, as opposed to like a traditional Ephus, which is maybe more what you think of when you see such a wild velocity range.
Right. Yeah. So I think you kind of already touched on it a little bit. You know, the spin rate, the obviously the velocity is kind of a big thing for why this pitch is what it is. But yeah, what are some other kind of metrics on this pitch? You know, what makes it so interesting beyond just like a really slow pitch?
Yeah, I mean, that's really the primary thing that's just insane, because it's the thing that's the most outlier. But if you look at other things about it, there are so many very odd aspects to the pitch. Like, for one thing, it has a ton of induced vertical break, which relative to changeups. And that's just not common in changeups at all. You normally don't see any of that. Cease's change is 14.5 inches of induced vertical break, which is just ridiculous for a changeup. Like, that's not a thing. That's not a thing that happens. It's part of the reason why so many pitch modeling systems are just struggle with this, because it just defies any sort of categorization. It doesn't really make sense in a vacuum, which is of course how you're supposed to measure things in pitch modeling. And it does not compute at all. It also, we were talking about like changeups normally have arm side break, and that's a key characteristic. Cease's just doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, it has, it just does not have arm side break, or at least like a very insignificant amount, which is insanely bizarre. Like, it just doesn't make sense. It's, you know, it's just adjusted vertical approach angles crazy low too. The way it flies is just odd. It has an odd movement, not necessarily because of like it has, in the same way that like Devin Williams' odd movement is crazy spin or, you know, anything like that. Maybe traditionally how you see it just floats weird. That's the best way I can explain it.
Yeah, at the risk of sounding dumb, you know, I was looking at, you know, the plenty of GIFs that you've included in this article. To me, it's like, oh, that's just like a slow fastball, you know?
It like, kind of is. It's like, it's thrown in a different way. And I was even looking at, like, him talk about his grips and stuff for it. And it is more of like a split change type grip that he slows down his arm speed for. And so it is kind of like a fastball, but you take a lot of the spin off of it, and which is pretty interesting. But in many ways, it is kind of like Cease throws like a little league fastball for one pitch.
Yeah.
That's sort of kind of how it works, but it is a changeup, and it's very weird. Mm-hmm. It's very weird in context of like, this is a major league pitch that's being thrown.
Right. Yeah. So I guess for context, for those who have not read the article yet, obviously Dylan Cease, he's mostly known for his slider, one of the most disgusting pitches in baseball. And of course, this year a lot of the hype has been around his new cutter. This changeup, he does not use it a lot, right? I think he used it 99 times in 2023. I think he's used it 8 times in 2024 so far. This is not a pitch that is, let's just say that Cease is relying on and it's on as his bread and butter to get guys out. But I think it's still interesting to talk about, because the fact is he still uses it in a semi-regular enough basis that I think it's something to be looked at. And I think even more hilariously with some of the graphs that you've shown, like, yes, there's a 22 last year, there was a 22 mile an hour difference between his fastball and his changeup, but that velocity was actually going down as the year went on in 2023. And then hilariously enough in 2024, what's the difference between his fastball velocity and his changeup velocity?
It's 31 miles an hour.
Yeah. Like, this is a guy who throws 95, right? That's a kind of his average fastball.
His fastball sits 97 this year.
Yeah.
It's sitting 97 and his changeup is 66.
Right. Granted, that's only over eight pitches, but that's still like hilarious, I think. Just the fact that he has this pitch that he's like, oh, maybe I'll think about using it. Yeah, so super funny here. Okay, but let's get into it. Why does he actually have this pitch in his arsenal? What's the point of this changeup that he's used eight times this season? Why does he have this pitch in his bag?
He's had a changeup for basically his entire career, and it's always kind of been the black sheep of his arsenal. I'll see if I can pull it up here. He's never thrown it more than 10% of the time in his major league career outside of 2020. And his usage rate decreased a lot from him throwing it a little over 7% of the time in 2021 to, you know, below 3% in 2022. But what Cease did is, like, his changeup was already a bit weirder. It used to be a fairly normal-ish changeup, and then he really started taking a ton off of it. But what he did in 2023 was he really took a lot off of it and made it from a pitch that was slow to a pitch that started coming in the 60s once it got to September. It's an interesting pitch, and this is one of the things where I'm like, pitch modeling kind of can't evaluate this. And at the end of the article, I say, like, I ask the question, is it a good pitch? And my answer to that is, like, that's not as much a statistical question as it is like a philosophical one, because a pitch that comes in at 66 miles an hour that doesn't it's not really a good pitch in a vacuum. But here's the thing. You can't sit on a 66 mile an hour pitch, and all hitting is like mostly timing, and you're gearing up for a 97 plus fastball or a slider or a gnarly curveball. You drop a 66 floater change in there, what are you going to do? No one's gotten a hit off of his changeup since April of 2023. And, you know, a lot of that is due to the fact that he doesn't really locate it terribly well. It's all over the place. But no one's been able to really do damage against it. And I think the way he's described it in interviews and stuff, and what from what I've seen, is it's basically a palate cleanser pitch. And in game scenarios, it's pretty interesting because, you know, he'll throw it basically any time. But if you think about it, right, maybe it's second, third time through the order. You've seen his stuff, or you're timing up pitches. It's into account. He throws it in there, and suddenly, you know, that's going to mess with timing and change it. We talk about changing the hitter's sights. No way to do that better than to just throw something, you know, no one's seen since like high school or middle school in terms of its pitch characteristics. Like, what do you do against it? It's pretty much an unhittable pitch just by the merit of like, how are you supposed to deal with it? You know, he throws it like maybe once a game, right? So you can't expect it. He throws it against lefties. You know, last year he threw it against lefties about 6% of the time, but it's not like a consistent enough basis where you can expect it. I also think, and this is something that I thought of, and I didn't talk about in the article, but I think it's worth mentioning, in the pitch clock era, having a pitch that's effectively just a palate cleanser that is a total reset of everything currently going on in the at bat. In the pitch clock era, think about like a 1-2 count and you throw this in there. If it's a strike, it's a strike and you're out, and it's going to be really hard to hit. If it's a ball, then instead of, you know, the 15 seconds normally to gear up for, you know, to dial it back for a strikeout pitch, you now effectively have, well, after throwing a pitch that doesn't tax your arm at all, you now throw, you have like 40 seconds to gear up for maybe, you know, to empty out the tank and try to dial it up in the, well, in the high 90s, spot a hard upstairs fastball. And I think there's some interesting applications and mind games afoot where you can say, this is a really weird pitch. You can't really do anything about it. But the hitter also can't do anything about it. It's a weird pitch to them as much as it's a weird pitch to us, and it's a weird pitch to the pitcher. And just in general, weird things in baseball tend to work in a lot of ways. And, you know, we see that with funky deliveries and all sorts of things. What are you going to do about this pitch? And so it's a lot of pitcher batter mind games with this thing.
Yeah. Like, I think you've got a really good graphic in there from Baseball Savant, basically showing that the release point for that pitch is nearly identical to his fastball. And I think that's important because, like you said, it kind of resets the batter because they see this pitch that is coming out from the release point of the fastball, but it's crossing the plate like half a second slower, throws out their timing, and they're like, what did I just see, right? And now, obviously, he only throws it once a game, but being able to just keep guys on their toes and wonder, you know, what's coming next, I think is a kind of a fun skill to have. You know, it like you said, the models don't love it, but I was listening to The Craft, the podcast that Nick and Eno Saris have, and they were kind of joking about this idea of like feel plus, right? This idea that like sometimes pitchers, yeah, like, you know, it's not about the stuff, it's not about the location. It's like, do I have the feel? Do I like where this pitch is going? And you know, just jokingly, you know, vibes plus sort of a metric. And I feel like this pitch like has like some shades of that in the sense that like, you know, maybe you are throwing for a strike, but maybe it is you're just trying to like mess with the batter after they've, you know, seen your slider, they've seen your cutter, and you're just like, well, check this out, and chuck a 60, mid-60s changeup, you know, down the middle for a pitch.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the release point because it really does play into the fact that like this isn't just something, it is legitimate when paired with everything else, right? Mm-hmm. It comes out of the hand in a similar sense. It just is different. And if you think about this pitch as a gimmick pitch, not in a negative context, but just in the sense of like, this is something to throw in deep in your bag of tricks and really just throw them off guard. Like this pitch is like a flashbang. Like it's just totally out of left field, and it resets everything. And in that context, if you think of it that way, it's a perfect pitch. I don't think you could throw anything that is weirder, really, besides, you know, like the 1940s, like Spaceman, what is it, Spaceman Lee Ephus or whatever it was, you know, the ones that are thrown to the moon. But
sure, yeah.
Like it's just a total unicorn, and it's great.
Yeah, and I love that there's like intent behind the pitch too, right? It's not a waste pitch. It's like, oh, I've got something. It, you know, I think you in the article you referenced like George Kirby and his knuckleball, right? Like that was kind of,
yeah,
that feels like more of a like, hey, let's throw this in just for fun and see what happens. But it's like, no, this is actually in Cease's bag. And
yeah, like if you think of Greinke's slow curve too, I mean, you saw that maybe like once a month or a month and a half every, you know, he'd throw it out randomly. Like this is a pitch, if you watch Dylan Cease start, you are probably going to see thrown, which is now in this weird kind of area where it sort of has to be treated legitimately. It's on his, you know, Baseball Savant page or whatever, it's on Pitcher List page, you go there, it has his change up, and it's just this silly little thing in the corner of the party, but it's there nonetheless. And in some ways you do have to respect it, as this is something he has, even if it's just of a totally different breed.
Yeah.
For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with a modern design that lets you go further and do more. The exterior is reimagined with compelling proportions and precise detailing, complemented by an interior built with integrity. The Defender capability is legendary. Whether you're facing off-road challenges or harsh weather conditions, its durability has been tested to the extreme. Powerful innovations like the intuitive driver display and award-winning infotainment system keep you connected. Innovative camera technologies deliver unobstructed views and effortless maneuvering. And robust cargo capacity means more room for your gear. Ready for a wide range of adventures, the Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 18 years from tonight, Grant Gill will become a comedy legend when he totally kills it at his improv class's graduation performance. Knees will be slapped. Hilarity will ensue. That's why he's already keeping himself in shape and razor sharp today with wellness tips and tools from AARP to help make sure his health lives as long as he does. Because the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/healthyliving.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Okay, so I love that you call this pitch the albatross in the article, because it's just this big, ugly thing, I guess. I mean, do you have any other fun reasonings for why you called this pitch the albatross?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. I got really excited I was able to call it that. What did I say in the article? I'm going to quote myself. First, there's two reasons why. First, in reference to the seabird, which, like Cease's Change, majestically glides at 67 miles per hour. Yeah. I love that. I cited an article about birds in a baseball article, and I think that's my journalism peak so far. I think there that's the go. Funniest yeah. thing I've done in a while, and I love that. The other reason is because, you know, an albatross refers to something that hinders achievement, like, you know, Pujols's contract is or an albatross contract or something like that. Sure. And I was like, well, baseball statisticians try to make these models to identify, to quantify the effectiveness of pitches. Well, how about something that throws a wrench in every model because it makes no sense in a major league context? And so, like, I was talking to Kyle about this, Kyle Bland, Pitcherless director of analytics, and talking about hit this, and he was like, look, man, I don't even know. It just makes no sense. And it's just Thomas Nestico and TJ Stats, I have to shout him out because he on Twitter would just make a ton of posts, and it would be before he retrained it would be like, you know, his TJ stuff plus on his fastball would be like 110, then the changeup was like -150. And yeah. I was like, well, he's like, well, that doesn't work clearly, but we'll figure it out.
Right. Yeah. Leave it to Cease to be the guy who breaks the model, but not with like his slider or his cutter. It's with this changeup that he uses like 1% of the time.
So funny. And every single time on his post, because he would post like the game cards for how the pitcher did. And every time it got to Cease, you'd see this just this normalcy and then this like dark and like forbidden row about a changeup that breaks a model and is graded absolutely horrendously, like it was uncovered, and it's just hilarious to look at every time.
Yeah, I do want to kind of maybe have a little bit more of philosophical conversation between two guys who are not professional pitchers, but you know, let's just talk about it anyways. In a world of, you know, more velocity is better, right? And I don't think you and I would ever argue against that having higher velocity does not make you a better pitcher. There's this unique application of lower velocity, right? Purposely slowing down your arm. And even though you're using the same, you know, but, you know, keeping the same release point, right? Like you're not throwing this Luby curveball or something like that. Mm-hmm. Is this something that you think just as a general question into the pitching ether, is this something that we could see in the future as like being a positive thing for pitchers of, you know, working with off speed in this sort of way to kind of just, you know, develop the bag a little bit more?
One of my deepest fears is that like the next C start, he throws this and it gets taken like 460 feet and he never throws it again. Yeah. And it's like, well, I spent all this effort. But I think in a weird sense, I don't think this pitch can be thrown much more than it does. I think it probably could be thrown a little bit. He threw it, what, 3% last year? I actually think that's a pretty good place for it. Because I feel like, let's be honest, this pitch isn't good. I'm sorry. I know it's not. If you look at it objectively as a pitch in a vacuum, this pitch is not good. However, in context with everything else you know about Cease and in context of at-bats, this pitch can actually be really great and have secondary objectives. Like I talked about giving the pitcher more time even or something like that. Like that can be good in secondary objectives besides just throwing strikes. You know, there's more to pitching than just that. To that extent, I think there can be a bit of room for, you know, every fourth inning or something like that. Throw something out there. We've seen guys do things like this with moderate success. You know, we've seen, you know, things that, like I said earlier, funky things tend to work and weird things tend to work in baseball and in pitching. And I think there can be a place of maybe not to the extent of 30 miles an hour slower, but if you have, you know, your normal curveball, let's say it sits at like 80, have a slow curve in there. I could totally see an application for that. And you throw it every once in a while. And obviously that's going to have a relation between the pitcher and catcher and things like that. But I think if there's something that is always going to be beneficial, it's keeping hitter on their toes and keeping hitter guessing. And being able to mess with batters is always going to be beneficial to the pitcher in basically every context, almost regardless of what that pitch is, whether it's a 66 changeup or whether it's, you know, something else, maybe, you know, something even ridiculous like a screwball, you know. I think we're seeing even this year, guys are throwing splitters, and for most of baseball in the last like 20 years, splitters were really rare. And now they're coming way up in popularity. Yeah. I think getting new looks for batters, new tools. And even if that tool is a total, you know, not semi-efficacy pitch, I think there's a lot of secondary benefits that can have besides just throwing strikes. And I think there could be room for a pitch like this. Do I expect suddenly in a couple months, everyone on the Mariners pitching staff starts throwing mid 60s changeups? No. Do I think that, do I think that, you know, there's a place for something like that? Yeah, I think so. I think it could happen. I think we've seen sometimes pitchers are a little scared to mess with their arsenal or, you know, they have a thing that works and they're going to stick with it. I don't really think any coach is going to tell them to start throwing that because, you know, the coaches are trying, they're trying to prioritize maximizing spin rates and velocity. Doing the opposite seems ridiculous. So, but I could see some pitchers getting really clever, really creative. I can just totally imagine, like, wouldn't it be crazy if Gerrit Cole threw like a 65 slow curve?
Yeah.
You know, what do you do against that?
And for him, it's like, because it's the change of velocity, right? Like if you told Kyle Hendricks to throw a slow curve or slow change, like he's getting smashed because, again, his velocity does not reach above, well, you know, I'll be nice and say 89 at this point. So, yeah, like it's the change in velocity. It's the change in rhythm that ultimately is the reason why this has worked a couple times for Cease this season.
I remember an old clip of it was some pitcher against like Alex Rodriguez, and I want to say it was on like the Rangers. So they threw him like two or three EFISes in a row, and I think after a couple of them, He hit one probably close to like 470 feet. Like it absolutely was just, I'll send you the video later. It was just absolutely tanked to the moon. So yeah, there's a fine line you have to tread, but right. I mean, if any pitcher is watching this in their car, listening to this in their car for some reason, throw one out there, see what happens. you know, and if it goes wrong, don't blame me. This is not pitching advice. This is just
right
talking about an article I wrote.
All right. Well, really appreciate you coming on the pod, Carson, to talk about a pitch that was thrown less than 100 times in 2023 and less than 10 times so far in 2024. But hey, we like to talk about nerdy stuff at Pitchless, so fully enjoy the fact that this article exists. Is there anything that's coming out for you coming up on Pitchless, or any way that people can be following you on social media in any sort of way? Shout it out.
Yeah, well, I should have a handful of articles coming out sometime in the next month. It's still early in the works, but I've got an exclusive interview coming up, which I'm really excited for. So we'll keep an eye for that. But for all my opinions on baseball and, you know, anything else, if you want to see me get mad at Christian Vasquez at bats, you can follow me at he's laughing because he knows what I'm talking about. Follow me at PL Carson
Twitter right now or something.
it's been rough, man. It's been great.
We're paying
you can follow me on the app formerly known as Twitter at PL Carson, where, you know, I post all the aforementioned stuff and more. Follow me on, you know, follow my latest happenings on Pitcher List for my latest articles. And thanks so much for having me, John. It's been fun.
No problem. Thanks, Carson. Appreciate it.
Of course.
All right. Thanks again, Carson. Appreciate you coming on the podcast. We are going to jump right into streamers for next week, specifically pitchers. I'm going to start with Zach Littell. He is 30% roster on Yahoo, 15% on ESPN. He goes up against Oakland this upcoming week, and with Littell, his main calling card is his command. He's got a 4% walk rate, which is really, really good. He has a respectable 3.42 ERA and a 1.25 whip on the season. Again, those numbers aren't great compared to a bunch of other pitchers. You know, they're pretty much around league average, but they aren't good enough to do well against a team like Oakland. He also has an above average strikeout rate too, which helps, as Oakland is the team with the second highest strikeout rate in the majors behind the Seattle Mariners. So a little bit of chance there for being able to do a little damage with his pitches and rack up some strikeouts. The hard thing here, of course, is that it's not a great win chance because Tampa Bay is also struggling a little bit. So, you know, if you're hunting wins, maybe avoid this one. But, you know, if you need something like strikeouts or maybe some good, you know, whip numbers, I think Zach Littell is a good candidate for that. Mitchell Parker is 20% roster on Yahoo, 6% on ESPN, and the Nationals pitcher has slowed down a lot since his hot start when he had two great starts coming, I believe, against Houston and the Dodgers. But since then, pretty much every start he has, he's given up, you know, multiple earned runs. It hasn't been incredible in terms of his strikeout numbers either. He did kind of get reset with a start against Minnesota last week. I believe he went 7 innings, had 7 strikeouts. Yes, gave up 3 earned runs, so not great there, but the strikeout numbers were really nice. And he actually showed off the 3-pitch mix. He got his fastball, his curveball, and his splitter working in that start. Unfortunately, though, he now gets Atlanta on Monday, according to Roster Resource, but he does get a better matchup in Cleveland later in the week. So this is one of those cases where if you're in a weekly league, I definitely would avoid Mitchell Parker at all costs because you just don't want to see him deal with Atlanta, even if it turns out to be a gem. But if you can make daily moves in your league, definitely check out that Cleveland start, as you know, there might be some managers that drop Mitchell Parker because of his Atlanta start, and that's a good opportunity to go ping him up for that start against Cleveland. And then finally, Matt Waldron is rostered 10% on Yahoo, 5% on ESPN, and the San Diego Padre. I think, you know, if you've been reading any write-ups on Waldron, you're, you know, well aware that this is a guy who actually has a legit knuckleball, and he is throwing it. It's his highest usage pitch. And yeah, if you have like having, if you like having a little fun on your fantasy teams, he does get Miami this coming Tuesday. He has been on a nice 3-game streak of decent appearances, and I would expect this one to go well as well. That being said, Miami is still occasionally dangerous. Last week we suggested Robert Gasser, and that went horribly for Gasser, and I guess for any manager who had Gasser on their teams. And so just because the Marlins are bad does not mean that obviously that this is a guaranteed success, but it is a pretty good chance. So if you're okay with trusting a knuckleballer and you want to do an early week stream, again, this game is on Tuesday, Matt Waldron is likely available in your leagues, and even though there might be some risk there, it might end up being worth it. So definitely, if you're that kind of guy who loves streaming random dudes, definitely check out Matt Waldron. But I do, of course, want to reiterate, you know, Nick's philosophy on streamers, which I kind of follow with as well, which is the goal of streamers is to end up finding pitchers that you end up keeping on your team, right? You don't want to always be churning through guys. Now is the perfect time to be churning through guys, you know, kind of this late May, early June time period where we're still figuring things out, but we do have a little bit more information. You know, guys like Reese Olson, for example, who, you know, was a streamer for the good chunk of the first part of the season, but now has become, you know, a legit guy that you probably want to keep on your teams. You know, guys like that, I think this is a great time to gain that intel. And I don't know if any of these three guys that I mentioned are going to be mainstays on a fantasy roster, but you never know. Zach Littell might find another gear with Tampa Bay, or maybe Mitchell Parker actually has something legit with these three pitches he's got. So, yeah, definitely continue to stream if you want to, if you have the roster space. But again, ultimately, the goal is to have a full set of pitchers that you don't need to keep cycling through. Well, that's it for today's pod. Again, you can find us at Twitter at ThisWeekPL. You can send your comments and questions at ThisWeekPLPod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at TheJohnKuh, and you can find Lee on Twitter at Regicidal. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcherless podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts, and leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy listening to the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcherless Plus. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitcherless Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Lee, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.
Credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.